Hello, hello, good people, good times, good relaxing in the back row.
Oh, yeah. this is the Back Row Super Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Zach, too.
All right, Zach, too. okay, so this is part two of our Dragon Con spectacular, all in your face. Mm-hmm.
Con all in your face.
Yeah, con all in your face. We're going to talk about Saturday at the convention this past year and Sunday at the convention this past year.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want to start off on Saturday or did you want me to? Because you guys started first, I think, because you guys went to the thing.
Yeah, the thing. The big thing with all the leather whips and the chains and the spanking. We went to something just as painful. There was no spanking. With the Dragon Con parade. It was fantastic. We didn't go the year before because we were probably too tired and inebriated from the night before to really want to rise up that early.
Yeah, and I know I've only seen it once, and that's because the room we were in overlooked Peachtree in the Hyatt, and so we could just like stand on the balcony and watch.
So you haven't even like been down in it?
No, because I had to meet my wife in the Marriott, and where our hotel was, I had to cross Peachtree. So I had to end up going up to the surface road, down into the MARTA station, and then underneath the Hyatt to get to the Marriott.
But you've never like sat and watched it?
No.
As many years as you've been gone?
I've been in the crowd of people and just not moving.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that's...
But something. No, I've never actually stood and watched the parade.
You lazy bastard. As many years as you've been going?
I don't like parades. I don't like them.
Oh, my God. You know, he's talking about the balcony, but I think if he could, like, just sit in, like, a hot tub on the side of the parade and just relax.
Oh, yeah. Maybe,
like, some ice cream to cool you off.
Oh, yeah.
He'd totally watch that parade.
I would.
But it's standing for, like, 2 hours in, like, a sweaty, bally mass, which I get. I'm amazed at, like, all the time Zach has been going.
I mean, are you going to go back again next year?
No, but I've done it now.
Yeah,
right? But I've done it now. So it's like, I'm just stupefied. But, you know, I understand because I've been in the experience and it's not comfortable. Yeah. And I tried to sit on, I think it was the Wells Fargo. They have this kind of upper hanging. You have to go up steps to get into the Wells Fargo. So where the step level is at, they have this kind of plant kind of space that has overhanging area, and so it's raised up off the ground like 4.5 feet, and so I tried to just sit on that to watch the parade, but apparently they don't, Wells Fargo doesn't want you to do that, and so the security guys are always yelling at people to like get off. But after it had been going on for like an hour, they were just too busy.
Yeah, they probably just
to just screw around with it. It's just like initially they're like they have to pretend to like try to do that. But then once the crowd gets going so hard, they can't walk to, like, get you, like, off.
They can't walk over to make you leave. Yeah, and also, it's like, well, if you're stuck there, where are you going to go? Like, tell me where you'd like me to go, Mr. Security Guard Man.
Yeah. And it's just really funny. I think it's probably a liability-based thing. They don't want someone to, like, fall off and
see Wells Fargo, I mean, that's
something.
True.
Some just, like, way far off remote chance bullshit. Like, some kid falling on top of someone's cosplay horn and like ripping their eyeball out and blood being splattered everywhere. Just that's the lawyers are like, no, we can't have that.
No.
It's like hypothetical situation. No.
Yeah, absolutely not.
So it was very packed and we saw Hannah's mom's friend who's doing a little bit of research by coming to Dragon Con on a book that she wants to do about cons, possibly Dragon Con. I won't go into that, but
she may need to clear that with the license holders of Dragon Con.
I don't know. I think she might just like foe it another dragon, like another name.
What, like Dragon Con?
Yeah, or like you know, Drag UConn. I don't know, something dumb. And she's was doing a little bit of research, or she wanted to see the parade, and that's all I'll say about that.
Okay,
be polite. So we went to go see that, and it was just a large, sweaty mass. But the parade was pretty cool. I haven't really done a lot of parades myself, as they're kind of they're kind of odd, but with all the costumes and seeing cosplay people, and there was a diva with just by herself, I think initially, because I didn't see a lot of
like a diva from Overwatch,
Yeah. And she was by herself initially. I saw her and it was really funny because I'd actually seen her before in the hallway of the Marriott and asked her to take a picture because her, it wasn't Diva. Diva was separate by herself. Tracer. That's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, gotcha.
It was a fantastic Tracer.
Yeah, there were a lot of Overwatch costumes this year.
Great. So great.
Like way more than last year.
And so getting to see all the costumes was pretty cool. I didn't really see a large Harry Potter contingent this year. I feel like I saw them at the end kind of sprinkled in.
Yeah, I think I want to say that the Lord of the Rings track is being folded into another track. So like Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, I feel like all of that stuff has kind of hit its
peak,
at least at Dragon Con. And so now they're going to have to make room for the new stuff. Like you notice there's a lot more comic book stuff here this year, probably because of Marvel and DC and all of that.
Yeah, make room for the 100, you know.
Oh, Jesus. You are never going to let that go, are you?
It's so great. It was like, it's like showing up to, you know, to a bar or an event someplace, and there's just this giant contingent of vocal fans for something you have no awareness of.
No idea. I have no idea what that show's about.
It's the true grandpa moment. It's not really that. It's more so that it's just, it's something that has a fervent vocal fan base.
Sure.
As is wont to happen sometimes with shows that don't really reach maximum splash saturation.
Right.
So then the people feel like, oh, it's even more special, you know, because it's like me. And
it's their
mine.
Thing.
It's like,
it's
mine.
Right.
And so there was, you know, quite a few events and panels on that just about every day. I thought that was pretty amazing.
Hmm. With the Lord of the Rings and Harry Potter stuff, you know, there are other cons that do that. Conjuration is one here in Atlanta that I've never been to, but I decided to volunteer to work there this year because I feel like it's a smaller con and it's one that, you know, I don't necessarily want to pay $50 and gamble. I don't mind working and spending my time there and seeing kind of the behind the scenes. And then when I have off time walking around the con. So, I might do a little solo thing.
I'm going to rock
on my voice memo and I'll just email it to you and you can put stuff on it.
You're going to rock that con badge?
What con badge?
Like supporter badge.
Oh, yeah.
You're a volunteer.
Yeah, well, I think you also have, you get a shirt that says like House Elf or something on it because it's Harry Potter focused. So
it could be like biggest House Elf.
The biggest House Elf. I'm hoping they'll give me a Hagrid scarf or something since I have a gigantic beard. But
that would be
know.
Great. If they just have those in a prop costume somewhere.
They have to.
Yeah. Just like a giant, because what would that be? Like the size of Hagrid's cloak or it's kind of a one piece of clothing. Does he have pants or is it just like this whole body covering?
I think he has pants, yeah.
Yeah, pants?
Yeah. I think his overcoat, like I have no idea what the size on that would be, but.
Gigantic
is the.
I'm trying to think something like size wise that would fit. That would be like probably like a baby elephant, like a tarp you'd use to cover a baby elephant.
Maybe.
Because it would be bigger.
If you're weaning it from its mother or something. Yeah.
Or like a Volkswagen. I'm just trying to think of how much fabric you'd need to like make you something that looks like that. All right. So, yeah, we did the parade, which was really cool. It was nice to see a bunch of different cosplays and different kind of costumes that they have there. Because with the way the Dragon Con's set up, I know we mentioned before, there's a lot of times where it reaches max peak activity and you can't really get around very easily. So there are a lot of different cosplays or even cosplay groups and get-togethers. Like there's things like the meetups, where everyone from a particular like universe will get together and do like a giant photo.
Oh yeah, the giant photo shoots with.
And I don't know where those happen. I assume that it would be
they're on the backside of the Hilton.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know where the gaming room used to be, where the elevators go down.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk like you're going to that new loft living situation, and you look out to your right and left, there are these giant like plate glass windows and you can walk through those doors and that's generally where they're at.
Yeah. So, no, there was a Spider-Man one. There's just all different kinds of universes.
There was one of nothing but Deadpools.
Yeah.
One year.
That's so great.
I have a feeling that would be like herding cats based on my interactions with Deadpool cosplayers.
Yeah. It would be like the, what's that, that bass drop song where it's like...
Oh, Turn Down for What?
No, not Turn Down for What. The other one where it's, gosh, where they have that right after the bass drop, like everything's like normal. And then once the bass drop happens, they do like a cutaway. It was a big YouTube phenomenon for a little while.
Yeah, I think it's Turned Down for What.
No. Turned Down for What is ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. No, it's not that. It's the other one where it's like, no, yeah, I'm going to have to look it up.
Where
now.
It starts off on a roof and they go.
No. That's a great song to dance to, but it's a song that you play, and I know this is going to irritate the hell out of people that might listen to hear this, where like the bass is like keeps on going, and then once it drops and it hits, it cuts away and people are wearing like horse heads and doing like zany dances.
Oh, Harlem Shake?
It might be the Harlem Shake. Is that how that goes?
I think so, yeah.
Where there was like tons of different videos?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be like the Harlem Shake, except just like the real life version. I imagine the Deadpool thing.
Yeah.
So let's see. Yeah, I really wanted to do the Joe Kelly thing, his Deadpool talk. Because the only way I know him is those, like in Wizard magazine, where they used to have like little head cutouts. And like this little teeny tiny little thing in print.
Yeah.
Talking about Joe Kelly, and he'd do like a little interview or something. That would be his head. And that's the only way I know him. So I would love to have met him. That would have been cool. Because the way he looks, he looks very reserved.
But he doesn't look like the guy that would write for Deadpool.
Yeah, he doesn't look like the kind of guy that would write for Deadpool. And kind of bring out all of, you know, the main nugget of the character that people know now.
Right.
And what's really, really funny about his run is that it did have a lot of fourth wall breaking stuff, but he really delved into like the really dark shit with Deadpool, which hasn't been touched on.
Existentialism and...
Yeah, and having to deal with like psychosis and other voices and... having to deal with, like, because there's a side of Deadpool where, it's funny to say, there's a side of Deadpool where you basically have, like, that humorous side and that other side. But then you have the other side that is the mercenary.
Yeah.
And he ends up being, like a Deadshot character, you know, where he's just, like, cold, heartless. Just going out to do what he needs to do, and that's it. That's the hit, you know. Fuck everyone else. And then I think it was kind of other characters' influences, like Siren and et cetera, that kind of like within the arc of the comics kind of brought him to like to kind of soften his stuff. And he had some other stuff. Like, it's funny because the actual Deadpool 1 comic starts off with him going to. I think he has to destroy like a facility or something of that nature. And it's like a nuclear facility.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if it's in Alaska or if it's placed in Canada. It's a really frozen tundra kind of area. And he realizes that what he's done, like as part of the hit and part of his job, like he cracks the back frame of this reactor. And then he's being told like, hey, if this breaks, like we're going to, it's going to radiate, you know, like half the hemisphere here. Like this is going to not be, you know, a cool deal. And so then he's just like, oh. And so then he like jumps into the reactor thing and he gets like super toasted with like gamma radiation and stuff like that. And so it actually fucks up his healing factor because his finger gets cut off.
Yeah.
And it's just funny. The whole run is funny. And he's just sitting there like trying to focus on making his finger grow back. And so he's like, and then you hear him yell, and then you hear a bloop, and it's just like a little piece of his fingers come back in the bone, because the gamma radiation apparently fucked up with his healing factor.
Yeah.
And then he's got to go fight the Hulk. But anyways, it's a separate thing, which that's also funny as hell.
Yeah.
So the whole run is just funny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Deadpool's funniest when he's interacting with other heroes. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
Yeah, that whole run with the interaction. I don't want to ruin anything, but you can get them in trade paperback, and they have collections now that I need to get. The interaction with the Hulk, he's also really smart, so there's a component of him that's kind of like the Punisher as far as like setting up hits.
Yeah.
Like he'll figure out, like that's how you would take out, the Punisher would like take out Spider-Man a certain way.
Yeah.
He would take out like Wolverine a certain way. And so also Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe.
It's great.
And that's that illustrates that whole section there. And so there's a moment where he's fighting the Hulk, and the Hulk's like just beating the shit out of him, and the Hulk jumps into the air and is like gonna smash him, and Deadpool's talking. He's like, you know, that's really great. You know what's really bad though about, you know, jumping in the air and smashing is like you can't change direction once you're up in the air. And so he has this giant telephone pole spike that he's like placed that the Hulk is just gonna get impaled on. And so then what he needs is to get some of the, exactly, he needed to get some of the Hulk's gamma blood. And so he manages to do that because then the Hulk obviously rips it off of him and stuff, whatever. And he's like, bye, because that's all he needed. And he gets out of there. It's so great. It's a great
scene.
That's
pretty funny.
It is. And so, yeah, anyways, I really wanted to talk to Joe Kelly because that comic run was just great. And he did a lot to bring the character to prominence. But I didn't. I think we got stuck doing some kind of lunch or dinner thing, and I missed out on that. So it's sad. But,
well, while you guys were doing the parade, I was fighting the parade route traffic, going down the MARTA, going up the Hyatt, going over to the Marriott, because my wife had this brilliant idea, which actually was really, really smart considering that everyone was at the parade, to do the Walk of Fame. Because, and Dad, if you're listening, skip forward about 5 minutes. Otherwise, you will spoil yourself for Christmas. But
yeah, so go to like 20, 24, 25. Yeah. Just do 8.
But with the Walk of Fame, one of the guests there this year was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. And growing up, my dad told me this story one time when, you know, wrestling was big when I was in like 5th or 6th grade. And my dad told me the story about when he was in college, he stopped at this gas station around the corner from the school and was filling up his car, just waiting around. And this group of small kids that were playing there thought that he was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, right? And so they start harassing him for an autograph, not buying that it's not him, because apparently whatever organization he was wrestling with had been at the Memorial Auditorium like the night before.
Yeah,
or
so
a
that's
few days before.
That's totally causality. Making.
And so they see some Asian dude who, and my dad has never been like gigantic and ripped, right? Like he's been fit, I guess. pumping gas in a little convertible, like they just assumed that he was this big shot wrestler, right? And so he signed some autographs for him, and they went on their way happy to have Ricky Steamboat's autograph. Well, with him signing at Dragon Con this year, Ricky, the real Ricky Steamboat, not my dad's faux Ricky Steamboat.
Your dad should have been there too, though. It's like an alternate booth.
Well, it's funny. Great. Like he apparently was in the parade, and so we had to wait a few minutes for him to get in there. But I was like second in line. And I walk up and you know, I order the picture of him in his, like, dragon head dress or whatever and signing it. And he goes, do I need to make it out to anyone? I go, no, it's okay. And he goes, okay, well, what's the autograph for? And I go, well, it's a Christmas present for my dad. And he goes, oh, is your dad a huge wrestling fan? My dad does not like wrestling at all. So, but I'm not going to tell him that. So yeah. I go, it's funny, when he was in college, he used to get mistaken for you all the time, and he kind of stopped signing for a second, and he looks at me, and he goes, he signed autographs as me, didn't he? I go, yes, but he never charged for them, and he goes, that's fair enough.
That's great. That's so great. He's like, that's that one on eBay that I just, what, I don't remember
I just don't
signing.
Know, I don't remember signing that one. I don't remember signing a napkin from Hardee's.
Exactly. That's so great.
So it was fun interacting with him. And the Walk of Fame is interesting because you see a lot of people that are standing in line and they're starstruck and stuff, but I don't know, like maybe they're childhood heroes or something. I've only ever been that starstruck once, and that was with Malcolm McDowell, because I feel like that's a different tier of actor than what you would get at like a Dragon Con. Mm-hmm. not to talk down on anyone who's at a Dragon Con.
Oh, throwing shade.
But it's funny because we were there so early. I think you guys went to the Walk of Fame after us, maybe a little bit after, but we, as we were leaving, we just made a loop through the place to see who else was signing autographs. And John Cusack was there this year.
Well,
he was sitting at his booth. He just had like a ball cap on and he was talking to people. And there were like three or four people in line. And I was just like, I turned to my wife and I was just like, he's got three people waiting in his line and he's John Cusack. That's not good. And she goes, it's probably early. And we were talking, I can't remember if it was with you guys or with someone else, but they said that like, it was like a 2 hour line to get to his autograph. So
yeah, once, even when we went, I think, I can't remember if he was there. If he was, there was a substantial line. I didn't feel like waiting in it.
Yeah.
Man, you guys went to like the dead time.
Yeah, we went to the dead time right after the parade was breaking up. And, you know, I think Ricky Steamboat, we had to wait maybe 10, 15 minutes for him.
But, really?
But because he was in the parade. So,
oh, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were people that were getting back from doing different events when we decided to go. That was really great. I think we went after you guys. I don't know if we went on Sunday.
Oh, you guys may have gone on Sunday then.
I think we went on Sunday because you guys went early and that was the perfect time.
Yeah.
And then by that time, it was a bit later. And so I think what we did is we ate and then we went to the Ask a Character voice panel.
Okay.
Which was the Mario, voice actor for Mario, Donald Duck.
Okay.
Voice actor from him, the guy who voiced Pinky. And then the one who's voiced...
was Maurice LaMarche not there? Was he there?
No.
No, I don't think so. I think he's been there in years past.
Yeah, I had a name list here. Yeah, the voice actors. One who played Yakko, Rob Paulsen. Donald Duck, Tony Anselmo. Steve Blum. And the voice of Mario, Charles Martinet. And he does Mario and Waluigi and Wario. And so he goes, wah!
Wah!
Yeah. And it's great. It's great. I think there's people with... because it doesn't seem so much that... stylistically, because I've heard other people, like the one who does... she has her own show now. Who does Bobby Hill's voice from...
she's on Louie. I can't remember her name.
And I heard her do a couple different voices because she was on NPR, not to digress too much. But there's a certain level of like flexibility people that have with voice actors.
Yeah.
And I think also a really good ear, because being able to get like a particular pitch or tone, even if it's through like a different manner.
Right.
Because I think Steve Blum was up there and he did like a version of like Donald Duck, but it wasn't Donald Duck. It was one of the ducklings,
one of his nephews.
Well, and actually, was it his nephews? I think it's the nephews of Scrooge.
Oh,
Scrooge McDuck. Because... it's either Steve Blum or Rob Paulsen, but I think it was Steve Blum because he just does tons of stuff.
Yeah.
And so they all had like kind of like an attempt at Donald Duck.
Sure.
And so they have really good ears. They can kind of get there. But once you were able to hear Tony Anselmo do it, it was just like, yeah, that's Donald Duck right there. The other guys are kind of facsimiles and try to get close to there, but it's really his particular talent and technique. And so it was really amazing to especially watch Steve Blum is cool because I feel like he's been in a lot of modern stuff, like a lot of video game voices.
Right.
And so I remember hearing his voice from different things. I think he does the old voice of Redfield because the Wesker guy wasn't there. And I think it was, I think it was Redfield. Let me check on the phone there real quick. So I'm thinking either Steve Blum. Does he do Redfield or is he the other Resident Evil?
He does Redfield because Wesker is...
Wesker's definitely wasn't there. Wesker was the one that I wanted to go to. That one event.
Man, the line was around the building for that one.
Really?
Yeah, the Albert Wesker fan fiction.
Okay. So Spike Spiegel, Cowboy Bebop, is Steve Blum.
Okay.
And I think someone else is Redfield. I feel like Steve Blum is another Resident Evil character, but... because he is on here, so I'm not making that up. I mean, he's under like a wiki for Renfield. Anyways, it's amazing to watch them sit on there and use their talent. He's done a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I think you were telling me that people were wanting them to say things as their characters.
Yeah, to like role play and have conversations and stuff.
Yeah, which I've seen videos of that from other cons where like the guy who voices Winnie Pooh and Darkwing, Jim Cummings.
Yeah.
Like they did the opening like 30 minutes of Star Wars A New Hope, but he was reading Darth Vader's lines as Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
Like,
that's so great. And yeah, it was... for that segment, Tony Anselmo is Donald Duck, and Charles Martinet, who does Mario, they were the ones that weren't willing to do any kind of crossplay with character. Because you got Disney, and then you have Nintendo, two traditionally, not specifically, I'd say, super conservative in one sense, but very controlling of their licenses and characters.
They're very brand conscious.
Yeah.
And so you wouldn't want... like, all it would take, especially with cell phones, like, if this were 10 years ago, they probably would have opened up some more. But with cell phones, all that guy needs to lose his job is for someone to be videotaping and sticking on YouTube him as Mario going, "Suck on my spicy meatballs!" And I think, know, like, I can't blame him.
Yeah, it's funny too because when they did talk a little bit, because they were asked to do particular things, or they were asked like, "What's some of your favorite lines?" And Charles Martinet, it was really funny to watch him go because with Nintendo, you know, a big thing for them is they don't really voice act a lot of their characters, especially their main protagonists.
It helps with immersion.
And you know, I've never felt like Mario playing a Mario game.
Oh, I can't say I have either.
But it's part of just making, I guess, keeping that character flexible. You can just like stick him in whatever kind of environment. And because how many lines does he have that he can use? He's like, "It's a me, Mario," you know. You know, like he just gets sound effects. So he was actually quiet through a lot of it, except when he was asked particular questions.
Which makes sense. I mean, like he does sound effects mainly.
It's just funny because he just didn't have a lot to draw from. Like he is such a huge voice. But Tony Anselmo had a really great thing where he was talking about how he will get lines given to him by different writers for like different segments that he does with Donald Duck. And, you know, you got, I think Mickey Mouse has like a show now that I think is 3D animated where Donald Duck will show up on, and I'm sure he was probably called for Kingdom Hearts whenever that comes out with Square Enix.
God.
And he'll talk about people giving him these lines, and he'll look at three paragraphs of lines, and he's like, "Guys, I can do like six of these sentences." Because the way he has to compress the voice out, it requires, and they talked about it a little bit on stage, it requires so much sound pressure and like pushing from his diaphragm and his abdomen that when he actually does it, it's kind of like, I'm going to get away from the microphone. It's kind of like going, You know, it's such like a pressure of the body, like inwardly.
And oh, then, he'd give himself an aneurysm yes. if he did that for 6 hours.
Yes. And so he's actually talked about he's had like five hernias, something like that, 5 or 6 hernias.
Jesus.
Because the level of pressure that he has to like commit to, it like it just pushes stuff out. You know, if you think about Donald Duck, it's like this. Yeah, it's like yeah. this raspy, you know, raspy, pressurized voice coming out of him.
Right.
And, of course, he did it while he was up there on stage, and the other voice actors were looking at him, and they were like, we're standing next to him. And when he does the voice, we can feel the sound coming off of, him because he's got to just push so hard to get it out there. And he did, I think someone asked him to record something for someone. So he did Happy Birthday. Donald Duck singing Happy Birthday was just so great. That was so great.
Wow.
I don't know if my wife has a recording of it because she was there as well. She might have recorded some of it. Not sure. But it was just fantastic, you know, just hearing that. And you could see the other people as, yeah. and I'm harping on Tony Anselmo because when he starts talking and doing his things, the other voice actors are just like, kind of silent because they're just watching in amaze too because it's such yeah, a
because it's an iconic voice
it's yeah. kind of voice and watching his talent to be able to do it they're just so amazed
yeah
you know at that bit of that level of physicality that you need yeah. for that
and I mean you know not saying that Rob Paulsen is not a great voice actor mm-hmm. but like there are people that can sound like Pinky and mm-hmm. Yakko and Wacko like mm-hmm. I know Rob Paulsen doesn't do Wacko, but mm-hmm. like you get my point. Like mm-hmm. that's just kind of a modified voice, whereas mm-hmm. Donald Duck, it, like there's physicality involved in yeah. doing it.
Yeah, it's very tough. You know, they talked about that kind of physicality stuff. I think I mentioned during the Sailor Moon voice panel as well. They talked yeah. about their director would always try to like get them to push harder and higher register. And how they, like, the next day they would just be out.
Yeah.
Because they just had to, like, screech in this high, super pitch, super high. I guess the director, you know, must have heard the original Japanese. And there's like, oh, listen to those high pitch Japanese voices. Like, even the guys are, like, right. way up there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for particular stylistic reasons. And cultural as well. And so they had to try to like push that same kind of thing out of him. So it was right. is amazing to watch Tony Anselmo do that. And yeah, I think they're all just really great. Other than that little thing where they had to keep on telling people like, no, we won't improv a scene. Cause they could kind of rehearse it out, but the nature of performers is improvisation.
Right.
So he would say something just kind of off the cuff. And then 15 seconds later, they said something they're like, oh, wait, no, I can't say that. Cause it's their, you know, they're performers and they can get kind of somewhere else really easily.
Right.
Especially with an audience kind oh, of sure, like sure. having them on. So yeah, Rob Paulsen was really great. He had, you can obviously see he's been voice acting for a long time.
Right.
And so he has a very particular mindset about voice acting and I guess kind of a dignified composure when he's like answering questions and talking to fans about different things and kind of, I wouldn't really say like gruff.
Yeah.
But just the way that like he understands the industry and you can see that he's been very weathered, you know, through right. the whole experience. So, but they're all, you know, very talented. We enjoyed it a lot. Really glad we made it there. And so I think that was it for that. What did you guys
the thing at night?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So after the Walk of Fame, we walked over to the gaming area. It's always good to just to see and poke our heads in. We didn't do any like tabletop gaming this year. I used to do that a lot more back when I was in college, but like at this point, like I would rather be in panels at this point. So I've kind of gotten away from that necessarily. So we went to the electronic area of the game room. So, you know, I walking past the old arcade machines that Southern Fried Game Room or Southern Fried Expo brought this year. Mm-hmm. And I found where there was a Joust cabinet. Now, I knew Joust was a 2600 game.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it in cabinet form. And really? So my wife was like, what is this? And I'm like, it's the game that made me why I am. Because have you ever played Joust?
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
So the purpose of Joust is that you're a knight riding an ostrich.
Okay.
And you jump around the screen, and it's like a it's vector based. So if you jump off one side, you pop up on the other side, right? And so you make it around this stage, and you're trying to attack other ostriches and break their eggs and get the eggs. It's the most gonzo thing I can think of. Like, why the fuck would you have a knight riding around
on an ostrich? Just the novelty.
Just the novelty. So I we played a couple of rounds of that because they just had it on free play. And then we were poking around the Tokyo Attack section, and we found a DDR. I can't remember the mix it was, but it was a DDR machine. I am so out of shape. I have not played DDR in forever. Like, my wife was, I think, playing on heavy, and I think I was on medium. And afterwards, like, I could feel the blood rushing to my face. I'm just like, I'm out of shape. You're out of shape.
Did you guys see the other one that was right next to it? The one that was
the advanced one? Kinect based, yeah, that was like that had a camera on it.
It was much better than Kinect.
Oh yeah, no, it was better than Kinect, but I'm saying there was a video component too. Yeah, we did that. I mean, we didn't play it, but like I did see it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looked fun. It looked like way too involved for
me. It was so great. I saw a guy that was playing it, and I just sat and marveled at him for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Because he was just getting excellent and like super on
point
scores.
Oh, when people are doing things like getting perfects on games like that, it's impressive to watch them do it.
Yeah.
And I think my wife played the table flipping game. I forget the name because, again, the cab is in Japanese.
Mm-hmm. It's probably something like table flip.
It's probably something like table flip, but. Yeah, she had a good time, like, building up the flip meter by banging on the table and then, bah, knocking it over. Yeah. So that was fun. I walked around. They had a large section of people demoing VR stuff this year.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if you had to pay for it to do it, because, like, I'm not going to pay $20 to use a headset for 5 minutes.
Yeah. It was that mech assault thing. Is that really that?
No, not the battle pods. Those battle pods are actually, I've heard my brother said that he did it a couple years ago, the last time he went. He said it was fun, but you could pay $25, start a match, and then 30 seconds later just be out of the game. Because if you're riddled with bullets and your character goes down, well,
that's
you
it.
Should
you're
have
done.
Luck. You're done. You're done. Wow.
What was the other VR stuff you saw?
Well, there were people, it looked like they were demoing, Vives and Oculuses.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
It was on the other side of it was between Tokyo Attack and, Southern Fried People.
Okay.
So it was like in the middle of the hall.
What's Southern Fried People?
Southern Fried Game Expo. They're the people that bring like the vintage cabs and pinball machines and stuff like that. But yeah, I really wanted to try a PlayStation VR set because I feel like if I'm going to do VR, that's how I'll do it. But I don't want to pay $300 for it, and I've never seen anyone demoing it.
Yeah.
Which was the case this year. I've tried whichever one does not involve the room setup. Is that that's the Oculus Rift, right?
I think the Vive doesn't require room setup, does it? I thought it was Oculus VR.
One of them is just a headset, and the other one requires you to put up two poles to do. I'm not trying that one because I don't live in a big enough space for me to set up two poles and then run around and act like an asshole.
Yeah. I feel like I that have would have to it. Be Oculus. I don't know.
The other one I have tried, and I put it on, and 30 seconds later, I had the worst headache I've ever had in my life. And so I'm just not, I don't know if it's the hardware or if it's my brain interpreting the software or what, but I'm not getting that either. So yeah. I want to see if I've heard better things about the PlayStation VR, but I want to try it before I spend $300 on something.
Yeah. From what I understand, the headset is actually really, really comfortable.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. On. And I've heard people who get motion sick playing the Vive or the Oculus or the the Samsung VR one have no problems playing it because for whatever reason, it's balanced just right. But yeah. Again, I want to see for myself.
Yeah, I think there's particular things with like the setup for the Vive or the Oculus where depending on the game, they have to kind of calibrate the experience and the field of view. Sure. And all that kind of depth stuff. Whereas when something gets put on the PlayStation VR, yeah. It's been really calibrated for that piece of hardware yeah. And for that kind of experience. So they kind of jigger it so that you're not, you know, vomiting on yourself
yeah.
later.
Which I appreciate. I mean, I don't want to vomit on myself for real.
I saw one reviewer who plays a lot of games and he talked about how, what was that one particular game experience that he really wanted to.
Was it the Let It Die?
No, I don't game? Think it was Let It Die. It was something else that was really funny about. Gosh, was he talking about? I think he was even just talking about the Splatoon motion controls. How you aim by how you pivot.
Oh, the thing. Yeah, with the gamepad, yeah.
And it was something like that. It was something silly, and he was like, "I can't do it because I just get sick," and that sucks. So. It was something that I wouldn't expect to have that kind of experience from.
Huh.
But the PlayStation VR is cool. I mean, there's quite a few headsets out. That one, I think, has sold more than the Vive and I think even the Oculus.
I mean, it makes sense because it's a lower barrier of entry.
Mm-hmm. And there's already, like, there's game experiences that are built for it and developed. And hopefully. Sony's an odd company, so there have been some game things and some experiences that you can play that with. And I know with a game coming out like with Skyrim, with the VR headset,
yeah,
that's going to be integrated into the Sony PlayStation VR experience. And the same thing with Fallout, which they're not quite ready to do yet, but it's close. And so that'll be another kind of entry, like, hey, you can play Fallout in VR.
Well, that'll be interesting, because I know that the Star Wars Battlefront version of the VR experience, like, it's like A-level.
Yeah, it's really short.
Arkham VR, the Batman game, where you play as Batman, is like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay $60 for a 45-minute game. Sorry, yeah. Guys.
Yeah, I think they've come out with a little bit cheaper experiences. I can't remember how much the Star Wars one, but I feel like it couldn't have been more than like $10, $15. It was just really short, but it was really cool. Like I saw them play it through the feed of what they were seeing in their headset, and they have like a console that they can move around and like touch buttons,
yeah.
And you're in a cockpit, and the resolution of the stars and et cetera, you know, space is really good.
Right.
And so I thought that was really a very positive direction for that experience.
Yeah.
One thing about the VR is I've heard it's better on the PlayStation 4 Pro, but I'm not sure. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably get one of those when my current one breaks. Mm-hmm. But I've had mine 2-3 years mm-hmm. now, and it's
still doing good. Great. Yeah.
It's still chugging along, so.
Yeah, I don't see it. I might have to, if you want one, you might have to go over there and just like drop kick it or something to expedite that for you. Cause I don't see the, I mean, we still got PlayStation 2s that are kicking along.
Yeah.
And 3s. And
oh, I had a 3 die on me.
Did you?
Yeah. It was a second gen 3. It wasn't, I mean, it was still one of the fat boys, but it was after a couple of years of development.
Yeah.
Well,
the fat boys, I think... always had issues with heating. From what I understand, the most reliable ones are the thin ones.
Well, like, yeah, the thin one. So when I replaced the fat PS3 with the slim PS3, I just had this other PS3. So I was just like, well, I'll take it apart and see if I can you know, mess around with it. That way I can have one in the bedroom, right? Mm-hmm. And so I looked up some tutorials on taking it apart, and...
We are so off track now.
We are so off track. I took the thing. Well, this is a conversational podcast, whatever.
Hour three.
And dust and dog hair had just compressed. And we dust. Like, it's, but just playing it, I guess, it accumulates and it hard packed onto all of the stuff.
Yeah.
So I took a keyboard cleaner and like aired it out and bagged up all that grossness. And I think it worked for maybe another month, and then it just died. Like, it got so hot that I was legitimately concerned that it would catch fire.
Yeah.
Like, the disc started wheezing, and it sounded like it was kind of starting to melt. Oof. And, like, I walk over, and I put my hand on it, and I go, holy shit, I'm just going to unplug this, let it cool off, then I'm going to throw it away.
Yeah. That's crazy.
But, yes, so to get back on track, we were in the game room. After that, we walked over to see Wasted Wine perform. Now, my wife watched them perform live last year, picked up a CD of theirs. I listened to the album and was like, I don't really like this. This isn't very good, right? But they were playing before Stoneburner, and so we caught the last half act of Wasted Wine. They are very much a band to see live.
Okay.
Their experience does not translate well to CD or album.
I feel like that was kind of like that way with Stoneburner too. Like, I enjoy their recorded music, but seeing like them perform in like a little clip that you sent me, I was like, wow, that's quite a show.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Also, I think the sound was better too during the show.
And yeah, probably. But yeah, no, the Wasted Wine show, you know, it was funny. It was like very vaudevillian. It worked with their like Southern Americana feel. Kind of had a cabaret-ish feel as well. But they leave, and Stoneburner starts setting up. Now, I have no idea what to expect other than that I saw this guy speak at the goth panel. And he's setting up an electronic drum kit that he has kind of forced together, two of them, so that there's kind of an overhanging stand over his head. And he has a set of two or three electronic drum triggers. It looked like a Zen drum pad off to the side. He had a microphone hanging over him so that if he wanted to say anything into it, which the lyrics in Stoneburner songs are gibberish, like legitimately, like he has said, if you can't understand what I'm saying, that's fine. I'm trying to evoke feeling.
Yeah.
And so to sing into it, he had to basically like lean up on tiptoes while playing and then howl into this microphone. That was running with so many effects on it. I have no idea what he was doing. And then he had this like metal thing tray that he had wired up with an impact trigger on it, so that every now and then he would just lean forward and then kick this piece of metal for like a you know,
like a crash effect. Some
a crash
kind of weird
effect. So this first set he played his regular style music. There was a guy playing an acoustic floor tom, like it was like a war drum. He's beating it, right? And then he had a belly dancer with him.
Oh, cool.
Which it was fun. Like, it all worked thematically. Like, the whole thing with Stoneburner songs is that it's dance music on Arrakis. So, you know, Dune is one of my favorite book series, at least the original, not the Brian Herbert bullshit with R.A. Salvatore. So yeah, no, it was really fun. That set was very energetic. He went through probably a gallon of water.
Yeah.
At one point he kind of barked out. He's like, "Can someone give me some water?"
Wow.
And then like five or six people in the audience like went to the cash bar and picked him up to Sonny and were just like, "Here you go."
That's so great.
But after that, you know, we met you guys for dinner. And then we kind of tricked you into going to see a panel on Life Force.
I'd say tricked slash I never really asked what we were doing.
Yeah, you didn't, but like, so we're going into the
so West I had no idea what we were doing, basically.
Yeah, yeah, I think, didn't your wife or my wife say it was just a horror panel or something?
You know, I think I had had something to drink at dinner, and I was just like, chill, cool, man. Sup, dog?
Oh, and so we were just walking.
I was just chill, cool. Did we go back to the room
no.
after dinner?
Or no, we just went straight to the thing? Yeah, we went straight to the thing. I
was still buzzed, yeah.
Our wives arranged this because my wife texted me during dinner, like mm-hmm. just me, and said, mm-hmm. by the way, the Life Force panel is at 10. That's where we're going next.
You
and
I was bastards.
Like, oh, really? Okay.
You damn dirty dogs.
And so we're up there and we're waiting for the panel to let out, the panel room to let out. And they have signs everywhere with the schedule. And so mm-hmm. like, I'm trying to distract you because I know if you see that and you know we're going in, you're just going to leave. Like, you're just going to walk out.
Like, I'm going to go take a nap, guys. Drink a beer.
But no, so the Life Force panel was Life Force Behind the Effects with Nick Maley. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that did the special effects for that terrible movie, which he even admitted. He's like, I think my puppets had better lines than some of the yeah. actors in this movie.
Better acting. It was amazing. Pretty much him and a lot of people involved with the production and
in terms of special effects,
lighting
at least.
And everything yeah. like that was really great. Like, there's nothing wrong with a lot of their effects. And I think you talked about it too, how there was particular times where they had him rework something or, hey, could we do this? And so he had to change it up.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's probably indicative of the process of making that film.
Yeah, well, and it also sounded like Toby Hooper would just kind of let him do whatever, because it sounded like he would go, I think this scene should do blah, 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 and it would really work better if we did X, Y, and Z, and he mm-hmm. would just go, okay, we'll do that. It's like, mm-hmm. well, okay, if the director's not that invested in the movie, of course it's going to turn out like garbage.
Yeah.
But wasn't he saying that he had a record for a short time of most zombies killed on screen at the same time for a while, or most zombies on screen at one time?
Yeah, that definitely could have been near the end of the film. That cityscape thing.
But it's funny, he was also explaining how,
like, that's an awesome zombie scene.
Well, yeah.
With the wind blowing around and paper.
Well, and he was saying that, like, you know, if you're doing zombie scenes like that, typically you will make up one or two zombies that you're going to focus on. The camera's going to look at them, and then everyone else is going to have hoodies or whatever, right? Well, the director decided to focus in on one of the zombies that was just dressed up in a hoodie, and so it had very little makeup on it. It may have had some oatmeal smeared on its face. Mm-hmm. It's just like, wow, okay, so this movie was a shit show behind the scenes as well.
Yeah, for sure. It was,
but he was very entertaining. I thought, like, he had a lot of interesting things to say about making that movie in particular.
He had some cool still images and stuff from as far as production, things in different states, like how they'd set up particular animatronics and stuff like that. It was great. I mean, I don't see any issue with his work in that film. It's everybody else's, though. The writing, and the direction, and the pacing of the story. And
I mean, none of these things he had control over.
Yeah.
So
it's not his fault, really.
But yeah, that was Saturday. Did we skip over anything with you on Saturday that you did?
I don't think so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, so we'll go to Sunday then. And we went to the vendor hall.
We all went to the vendor hall, I think.
And I will say, again, commenting on the rudeness this year, it's pretty rude. There was a you know, there was someone cosplaying walking around the corner, not really in the path of anyone where I was waiting to meet up with either you or my wife or someone. And one of the most screen accurate Claire Redfields I've ever seen. And I was like, oh, I've got to get a picture of that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so because I have a shitty memory and it takes a second for things to fire, I can't recall the name of the character in the moment,
mm-hmm.
but I recognized her immediately and I go, Redfield, can I have a picture? Right. And she stops and looks at me and goes, only if you can tell me what my name is. And so I was just like, oh, okay, never mind then. Never mind. Because, like, she doesn't know me. What if I had some sort of, like, recall issue? Like,
Zach condition.
Yeah, like, that was extremely rude, I thought.
I think to go back, you referred to her as Redfield's sister.
Yeah, Redfield's sister.
Redfield's sister, which is accurate. That's accurate. Yeah. But it's, like, it's missing, I guess it's missing that front name that she wanted, that first name.
Well,
I was telling Zach, I think it's Dragon Con, longtime attendees and people that are obviously devoted to the craft, they've kind of become possibly jaded by the explosion of Dragon Con to where they have to deal with people being rude or catcalling, not that you were catcalling, and just kind of sleazy.
Yeah.
So I imagine Zach was just like waiting on the wall with his big old man beard and his sunglasses that he's wearing inside, which is...
They're prescription
sunglasses, but he's still wearing sunglasses inside a building it doesn't need them. He needs them to see.
Right, but obviously. Because I left the case with my real glasses in the room in my back.
I just feel like Zach visually, his skis factor was like 1,000. And so he couldn't undo it because a lot of Zach is smiling and seeing that his eyes are just very friendly. But if you can't see those, it's just this big bearded tall dude who could just be the skeeziest creature you've ever met. But you can't see him smiling or you can't see his very kind eyes that he has. And you're just missing all that. So she wasn't having any of those good triggers. So she's just like, nope, this is just another skis ball who's just like around here. And he's going to ask for a picture and put his arm around me and give me a good squeeze. And
oh, no, I don't take pictures of people.
I know,
no,
I know,
at all.
But she probably didn't know. What I'm saying is that, unfortunately, I think the reason why Zach's probably noticing that more this last year is because there's a lot more of that element around and people are just more guarded, I guess I'd say.
Guarded, yeah, I mean, defensive. I guess more guarded, but like, okay, well, so interaction with a vendor then that I had this year.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. No, so that's a whole different case.
So I'm going to look for Ted Nafee, another guy that was in the goth panel, to pick up a copy of a comic that he was working on that he said he had just had the hardbacks printed and he had them for sale. Come see him in the dealer room, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go up to where the comic book artists are and I find his booth, but his table is empty and the tablecloth has been flipped up over it. And I only know it's his booth because he has a sign behind where he would normally be sitting.
Yeah.
But there's no chair. And so I get the attention because no one was really looking at her stuff. And with her attitude, I can see why. I kind of get her attention and I go, do you know if he's still here or...
This is another artist.
Yes, this is another artist selling things to people. And because she's sitting right next to him, I assume they talk, right? Mm-hmm. I say, do you know if he's still here or is he left the con? Do you know where he might be back today or whatever? Something very general, right? Mm-hmm. And she goes... Well, he isn't going to leave all his stuff here. And she points underneath the table where, I'll remind you, I can't see because I'm not on the other side of the table where his boxes are. And she's just like very snottily. She's just like, well, he's not going to leave his stuff here. Ted Nafee's a big enough artist that he could have an assistant mm-hmm. that is making sure he gets in a car to the plane and is coming back up to take down the banner and all mm-hmm. these boxes of things.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a reasonable question to say, do you know if he's still here or if he's just like checked out?
Yeah, that's what the Stimpy artist had last year. There was just someone else cleaning up after him.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, bigger artists can afford that. Mm. I don't remember this lady's name. She had some shitty generic furry cyberpunk comic that no one was in line to see. Mm. No one was in line to buy. Maybe she was having a shitty day, but that's not how you get sales. Sorry. Yeah.
Generally, too, for third-party listeners, in defense of Zach here, Zach puts a lot of work into being very polite and not rude. So Zach can't abide by bad manners.
I cannot.
He does not like bad manners because that's like Zach is like, man, I could say 1,000 shitty things right now because underneath the Zach is a very pissed off, angry old man Zach. But he's like, no, I'm going to say the polite thing. Be polite about it.
Be courteous.
So when, yeah, exactly. When Zach sees that, he's just like, ah.
Well, it gives me an excuse to be an asshole to other people.
Let
I think.
It out.
I don't, it makes me access parts of me that I don't like
mm-hmm.
because I guess in some id version of my head, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, if someone else is going to act like an ass, there's nothing stopping me from acting like an ass.
It's like, oh, this is the game we're playing? Oh, these are the rules? Yes.
Yes. Let me tear you down.
Yeah. So it's pretty crappy. Zach, were you wearing your sunglasses then?
Well, no, because at that point, I think you had pointed that out to me.
I'm just fucking with him.
And
right
so
now.
I had my sunglasses mm-hmm. like in the collar of my shirt
mm-hmm.
Because I had the artist map up. And so I was just like walking by the booths, kind of like blaring my eyes to read the name and then walking around.
I'm just screwing with him.
And then it was actually the lady at the Stan Lee table who pointed out where Ted Nafee was because okay. I was just like, could you orient me? And she was very nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, she was also working a table for Stan Lee, so mm-hmm. like, of course, she was nice.
Of course,
she has the best spot in the world, mm-hmm. right?
It's pretty great.
But yeah, that was about it for the vendor hall for me. Did you have any interactions or see anything interesting there?
Man, every time I go, there's always cool stuff and yeah. cool artists and tons of different work. I got a piece of work by an artist that my wife didn't really like, but, you know, I don't care. I really liked it, so I got it anyways. She's just lucky I didn't get two or three of them. Because I easily could have. It's these great little watercolors that have these cute little characters that are... I imagine what she does is she kind of just puts the watercolor on there on the canvas and lets it blot out. And then whatever parameters it has, she just kind of traces the lines. And then adds like little techniques and touches and...
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so she was great. And she was very nice too. She gave me a free little pin because I bought one of her... portrait size works. So.
I know when I was walking around the artist section with you, the one of them that stuck out in my eye, I mean, we don't have the space on our walls at home, but this guy painted, he used vertical space rather than landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a lot of like, I think you picked up a few. He had a lot of like, Wolverine dropping down over X-23 from mm-hmm. Logan and like Spider-Man like flinging himself up mm-hmm. a building.
That was great. I got his Spider-Man flinging up the building because
okay.
that was just awesome perspective wise.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of open space
mm-hmm.
on his thing because it's vertical.
Mm-hmm.
It feels much larger than it actually is mm-hmm. when you're looking at it, if that makes sense.
And I'm very critical with kind of the artist. Yeah, I wouldn't write a column or anything like that because I feel like part of that people having critical opinions is good, and it's good to have a critical eye to things. I feel like a lot of times with critics, part of it's about self-elevation over the work itself, because you can see its flaws and you can see where it's not meeting up, and there's a level of self-aggrandizement to it where you're just using your critique in order to raise yourself above the caliber of the work. So you can look down on it and take a piss on it and whatnot. And so if I like something, like if I like one of that gentleman's works that was using the perspective, I'm like, that's awesome. If I don't like something as much, I just won't say anything about it. Yeah. It's like, oh, that doesn't work. But I'm not going to tell someone that, or even like express it in a way, like to him or maybe to my wife, be like, oh, I like that one better. But I'm not going to like sit in front of him or even with...
And critique it.
And critique it. Even if I could. I mean, there's a reason why I like something and a reason why I don't.
Yeah.
And I do really appreciate, you know, good critical opinion, but a lot of times I feel like it's just...
It's, yeah, a lot of it is just like, well, you're winking.
Yeah, just point. Taking like, a piss on something.
Do you like it or not? Like, just move on.
So it was really good. I love getting to see the artists, and it's one of my favorite sections of Dragon Con. It's just going around and seeing the
The artist section?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys go into Artist Alley this year?
I don't think we did.
Okay.
Where's that at?
It's at the very bottom of the Hyatt where we saw Stoneburner.
I think I heard you guys talking about it, but we never got to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it more like a gallery, or what is it like?
Well, so you know where the musicians are performing out in the open space?
Mm-hmm.
You walk in one area, and then they have the entire rooms back there blocked off for artists.
Okay.
So what are they doing back stuff. There? A lot of them are doing commission stuff. Mm-hmm.
So is it like a gallery, or there's
a
just
lot
like
of
tables
it's like
them?
Yeah, like there's tables. I think it's like the mid-tier size artists.
Mm-hmm.
I know that our friend's dad, Stu, his dad will, or at least used to have a table back there.
Oh, really?
I think. Yeah.
That's cool.
So yeah, I mean, a lot of it is locals, people signing autographs and things rather than... Although Stan Lee was in the dealer room just because, like, that's really the only place you can put him.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the largest, widest open area.
Mm-hmm.
To take pictures with him and stuff like that. It's a little bit bigger over there than it is at the Artist Alley or the Walk of Fame.
So. Yeah.
That's probably why he was there.
Like with Stan Lee, I could have waited in line. I think... At one point, there wasn't really that much delay to like get to him, but there still was some, and it's kind of, for me, it's like, what am I going to say to the Pope of comics? Like, what kind of really exchange can I have with him?
Oh, well, when I was asking the, when I got turned away from Nafee's table by that lady, I walked back past Stanley's table because like where you could line up to take your photos with him. There was also a table set up where he had numerous people watching over his merch. And I was like, why does he have like 10 people here? Because he's got like three tables.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at the prices of some of the stuff there. Holy shit. like that has to be stuff that he just, because I can't imagine, for example, he had Spider-Man, the first appearance of Spider-Man. What is that? Amazing Stories. Whatever, it's him on the cover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Amazing Fantasy.
Amazing Fantasy, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just recognize the cover.
Oh yeah, very comic.
I don't know the exact
beautiful.
Issue because I'm not a huge comic collector.
Yeah.
Signed by him.
Mm-hmm.
And by
Romita? Is it one of the Romita?
Kirby? No. It was
Kirby?
Like the original.
I don't know if it's Kirby.
There were two sets of autographs on it. Uh-huh. I'm assuming one of them was the artist because the other one was Stan Lee.
Yeah, the one where he's got the rope thing and the guy underneath him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was Romita or something.
Maybe it was Romita Sr.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But it was two sets of autographs on it.
Mm-hmm.
$19,000.
That's beautiful.
Like, who is going to go to Dragon Con and spend that? I mean, granted... It's probably got a certificate of authenticity.
Oh, yeah.
Also, it's coming from Stanley.
Yeah, it's probably super graded already. Were they graded? Because I know the ones out on the front
I
out look graded. Okay.
I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I was just casually looking. I was like, wow, all of this stuff is way too expensive for me to
Think about.
Like, they had a couple things there that I think for the plebes were like $200. Mm-hmm. Like, he was selling a Funko Pop of himself that had been signed.
Oh, that's cute.
For like $200. And it was just mm-hmm. like, wow, that's...
Yeah. That's so intense. I love how they had a split up on the big tables where he had his stuff out.
Yeah.
Where the stuff that wasn't signed. And it was like, you can get this for this amount of money, and this is how much it will cost for you to get it signed.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you could get this for $50. You want to get it signed, it's like $900. And I was like, holy shit. I mean, I'm not going to begrudge him for, you know, making money. He's probably going to do something good with it.
Yeah, well, maybe.
I mean, he's a cool guy. From what his public persona and even the interviews I've seen with him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's probably no chance of him coming out and being like, Hitler did nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Like, the chances of that are probably pretty low.
Or he's got like a horse torture dungeon where he just like tortures horses.
Or like a collection of used children's shoes somewhere. Yeah. Like something deep and dark and buried somewhere.
Those weird stains on him. No, he seems really cool. So that, I mean, it's really, all those prices are definitely out of my price strata and desire to want. Comics because I get to read them and go through them and enjoy them. Kind of the collecting aspect is, one, it's difficult in price. Two, it's a storage issue, and you have to have very carefully controlled conditions for them. And three, it's hard to keep them, like to collect and find something in a good condition, because now it's better, but some of the older stuff, it was never designed to last.
No, I mean, it was...
just like printed on really crappy
pulp
paper.
Wood. Yeah, like there's a reason it's referred to as pulp. Yeah. It's pulp wood. Yeah. It degrades very quickly.
Yeah, the stuff now is like acid free and like super shiny.
It's
gloss.
Meant to be collected.
Yeah.
Well, it's like in the early 90s, there was the that comic bust or boom and bust where they would release like alternate covers. Like I remember I had a... And I'm not into collecting. I had a Venom issue one, but it was like the white the red holographic background,
mm-hmm.
and like it was reflective.
So much shit like that. Oh man!
But I mean, like, I was what, like 10, and mm-hmm. I was able to just walk into a comic shop and get it. That's not for collectors.
Yeah.
Like, come on. That's so that you can
sell.
Upcharge.
Yeah, sell more of those. Upcharge. I know Joe. Joe Madeira had a bunch of alternate versions of each issue, I think.
Had different covers.
Yeah, for Battle Chasers. And the Battle Chasers itself, number one, I think had three or four different variants. And there was one that was like a shiny golden version of it. And then there was other ones with alternate pages. And then the second printing had a different cover to it too, with a different backing. And it is intense. I think I collected most of them except the shiny gold, shiny silver one. Hmm. I had most of all of them except that one, because that one was particularly expensive.
Do you still have your Battle Chaser stuff?
I don't have any of my stuff. We'll talk about that.
Tossed out.
Yes. Yeah, it's thrown away. But mostly I just liked his, because each little cover would have like an original piece of art for it. And so I just loved his drawing style. I still think I really enjoy his drawing style. It's very Shiro induced. Very anime influenced, but with emphasis on particularities, like in the detail and the stylized form of a particular thing. So he's actually just released a game. I'm going to cut it off here right after this. But he actually just released a game that was, I think it was like an isometric third person perspective.
Like a Diablo? Like a hack and
slash? Yeah, like that. Yeah. But for Battle Chasers.
What?
Yes, because he still owns the license. Because I think with Image,
does he? Oh yeah, because yeah. Image is creator owned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we're still waiting forever to get more Battle Chasers as far as the story, but I imagine with that game, he's going to continue on in the storyline.
Huh.
And there was always talk when he originally had it out, like, oh, we might do like a TV series or like a movie or something. And I think it's just kind of industry talk.
Oh, man. I think an anime series of Battle Chasers would be pretty fucking awesome.
It would take him 10 years to do it. It was really, really funny because I think right before or after Battle Chasers came out, it might have been after, he had an interview in Wizard. And I don't think Wizard's still around, is it?
No.
Yeah. Wizard was so much fun. Wizard was
I used
really
to
awesome.
Like Wizard, and even though I didn't collect toys, Toy Fair magazine had I forget what they're called, but like now they would be considered machinima because you would do them on a computer instead.
Oh,
of,
yeah, yeah.
But the little comic strips with the superhero toys,
where
like Iron Man's always drunk, and like eventually Tony Stark drowns in his own piss in his suit because no one thinks to check on him.
That is so sad and true. And so Wizard had a great interview with him in there, where they went around his workspace.
Right.
And he just had the hugest collection of anime and a huge collection of different tools and video games. And so he talked about like how he would just sit and like play video games all the time. And that was a huge thing for him. And he would read different work and do other stuff. And it's like, that's why you can't finish Battle Chasers. Because you're always sitting there watching anime. You know, you got all this other shit you're doing, video games you're playing. That's why we can't get an issue of Battle Chasers out. And I think he was trying to transition over into doing video games, like maybe another industry at the time that was like hot and exploding.
Todd McFarlane cut him off.
Yeah. And because I think there was like 6 month stretches, and I think
between issues.
From getting it done. And when the work came out, it was stupendous. Because at that time, digital coloring was coming really strong into prominence.
Yeah.
So I forget what the particular name of the process, but the colors and the stock that they used for the paper for Battle Chasers and other Image comics at the time was just fantastic. Beautiful. Yeah,
it's probably why Image was not profitable for a long time.
Just beautiful quality. So, yeah.
After that, my wife and I went to the second show of Stoneburner.
Yes.
We saw them 2 days in a row. This set was much more aggressive because it was just him. And this was the third time that he was using that stand-up kit that he had erected. So I think he had a little bit better understanding of the limits of it, I guess.
So how long was that show?
It was about an hour.
So can you imagine after the first show and the second show and then coming up there, how sore he was?
Probably. He was a very visceral, physical player because it's all percussion.
Yeah, he's standing up.
And he's standing up the entire time. He is covered in sweat. And you know what? For our anniversary, we're going to go see him play at the Drunken Unicorn. We're seeing Stoneburner play. I love this band. They're so awesome. And yeah. Well, I mean, he's so awesome, I guess, because it's just him, really.
That's what a good live show will get you.
Diehard fans. I saw it, and I was immediately like, sold. This is the music that has been in my head forever, because I'm also a drummer, and I also dicker around in a crotch band. Like this is the music that has been in my head that I did not know that existed.
Yeah. It's just been like echoing back in the background, like, and then all the drum stuff that we can't do vocally. It's great. Yeah. Definitely go check out Stoneburner. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Especially live, do it live, or at least I'm sure they have videos of their performances up somewhere. On YouTube, somewhere.
Yeah, live is much better. If you just listen, like, I will admit the albums kind of sound like mid-90s dance tracks.
Yeah.
For the most part. Live, they are amazing. But I will still listen to Stoneburner like in my car.
Yeah.
Because I've seen them live. Yeah. So I know what that looks like when he's playing it.
I think it's hard too, especially if you're not like a huge band recording something.
Yeah.
And like in a particular kind of studio environment, it's hard to capture that kind of energy on a record.
Yeah.
But it's a fun record too. I listened to it as well.
Oh yeah.
Let's see what we were doing at that time.
On Sunday?
Yeah, at that time of night.
Well, I mean, the Stoneburner thing was probably at 4 or so. I know my wife went back to the room because for unrelated reasons, she also had a headache. And so I think she went to go take a nap because Sunday night is when we stay out late.
Yeah. I think we came and met you guys after that nap thing. Like, I think you guys got it with Stoneburner because we just showed up, I think, and we sent.
Well, so I left her in the room because I went to go see Kroll building 40 Slayers in 10 days and the Beast You Didn't See, also with Nick Maley.
Yeah, because I think you weren't there. Hannah and I came, and we laid down to watch a nap or watch a little bit of TV or something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so then at that time for me, like I said, I was in the Kroll panel, which if no one has seen Kroll, go watch it. It is amazing. Supposedly based off of a D&D campaign that the screenwriters wrote like when they were in high school or whatever. And turned into a movie. I don't know if I believe that. And Nick Maley is like, I'm unsure as to where the script came from, to be honest. But he got hired on. And he was explaining, you know, at that time, this would have been the second movie where he is one of the main credits thanked at the forefront. And so he had his own little special effects unit. And the director and the producer of the film would come to him with like, you know, the bad guys in this movie, the Slayers, this is what we want them to look like. And mm-hmm. this is how we're doing. And he would go, well, how are you making this armor for them? And they would tell him the process. And he goes, that's not good. Like, this is during pre-production. This is mm-hmm. like months to the shooting. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't know if I would do that process because it will look, it will look like people wearing skin-tight leotards because that type of material contracts really easily. And so basically he was like, it'll look like they're Power Rangers. Like, I didn't say that because this was in 1982 or whatever, mm-hmm. but that's what it would look. They wouldn't look fearsome and imposing. They would look, you know, light in the loafers is what he said.
Light in the loafers?
Yeah. Well, he's an old guy. Like, what are you going to do?
That's a phrase I'm not familiar with.
Mm-hmm. So they come to him 10 days before the shoot and they go, we just did costume tests. It looks exactly how you described and we need you to make 40 costumes. So he and some other people like slapdash together these costumes that in the movie look pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Before the panel had started, I was talking with this guy who was there with his dad. And he was cosplaying a Destiny character and he had molded all of that stuff.
Oh,
himself.
God. Good grief.
And his dad was like, yeah, I'm trying to convince him to come see this movie. And afterwards I was talking with them, as they were leaving and the guy, and he was probably 19 or 20, like he's a younger guy. Was just like, yeah, those Slayers look pretty badass. He's like, I think I'm going to cosplay one next year. He's like, I think I'm going to try and make that outfit.
That's cool.
But he was saying the Beast, the big bad guy in this movie, mm-hmm. he designed a working vascular system for it, mm-hmm. right? Like to make it look as real as possible. Like he fabricated hair going up the arms, the muscles that would pull in the right places so that you could see liquid being pumped over the muscle. So it looked real, even though it was animatronic. It took like 3 or 4 people to operate this animatronic thing. Mm. And the director decided he wanted to use anamorphic I think either anamorphic cameras or lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what that does is it makes everything very dark and blurry, so you can't see any of this. But like he pulled up a slideshow and was like, this is what this thing looked like. And it looks impressive and terrifying, and it looks like a section of arm laying on a table, but it looks like a real arm.
Wow.
And in the movie, it's just this dark mess with these bright glowing eyes that you can see out of the darkness. And it's like, wow, man, this guy has the shit luck to like put in 150% effort on his part. And then a lot of it just gets cut because of ineptitude on other people's.
Director's just like, just fucking him up. That sucks.
But yeah, it's funny. He was, his home and museum is actually in the Caribbean. And this is right before the hurricane went through the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And he was leaving Cannes that like after that panel,
mm-hmm.
hoping to get back home so his wife did not have to deal with all of that alone.
Yeah.
But he brought the few things that didn't sell, and I was just like, oh, how pissed is my wife going to be if I buy this thing from him? Because he had page one of the script, like shadow boxed,
mm-hmm.
with the glaive, with a certificate of authenticity, with a picture of that scene being shot. And he was charging like a ridiculously low price for it, for what I would consider that to be worth.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have, without a second thought, paid $500 for that. But I was like, how pissed is my wife going to be if I show up with this thing? We don't have room for art on the walls, but really I show pissed. Up with this thing and I've spent $500 on it.
really pissed.
So I thought better of that. I did get a photo of him and of the glaive because someone was just like, yeah, everyone said it's plastic and it's a prop. And he's like, oh, this thing right here. And they go, yeah. And so he thunks down this like wooden block that he uses to like show it off. And he like pulls all the blades out and like thunk, like it's a working knife.
Wow.
He just like plunged into this block of material. He's like, yeah. No, he's like, this will cut. I mean, it's a real thing. It doesn't work like in the movie, obviously, but
yeah.
I mean, you can pull the blades out and display it like this.
That's great. I always thought that was a cool little piece.
Yeah.
So that shadow box thing had the glaive in it? You said? You mentioned that?
No, it had a work print of the glaive. Like a blueprint of it. For fabrication.
Yeah, I think if you had gotten something like that same presentation, but it was from like Star Wars A New Hope or The Jedi Strikes Back.
Yeah.
But from Crawl, and you're going to hang this up on the wall, it's going to be you and your wife, maybe.
What? No, maybe no, I don't bit. Think my wife likes that movie.
Yeah. And then other people that kind of like that movie.
I like that movie.
I know. It's just, it's not something she could be like, oh, hey, look, we got this thing from
Yeah,
Crawl.
it's not exactly like Star Wars. It's, yeah. Yeah, I see what your point.
It would be like your wife's presentation head would be like, oh, and this is that thing my husband spent too much fucking money on. that would be
the association in her
yeah,
head.
That would be the blurb.
He spent way too fucking much money on this piece of this piece of memorabilia for a shitty thing.
Yeah. That's so great.
So, yeah, after that, I walked back and met up with you guys, mm-hmm. where, thanks to the Wi-Fi ease and setting up on the PlayStation, mm-hmm. you guys were watching The Masquerade.
Yeah, no, it was good.
I don't really have any words for The Masquerade. I'm
Masquerade
not a fan.
It was great. It was so good. It was great. I think it was a lot of fun, too.
Oh.
A lot of fun to watch while having a beer and just sitting down relaxing. It was good to just kind of sit and repose and make fun of things.
Yeah, I really wish that they would cut the skits because...
Well, let's talk about the skit you enjoyed most, which was the Mario Kart one. You thought that one was the best.
No.
Let's talk about that one.
Well... All right. So here's the thing is that this family obviously worked very hard. And
Zach's a hater.
This family worked very hard on the outfits.
I'm glad to hear you say that now, many months after the fact.
And the thinking behind putting up the skit.
It was awesome. Their things just, you know, didn't work as intended.
It did not work as intended. They probably killed the battery on the little fake car that the kids were driving around as the Mario Kart. And so the skit fell apart and did not work. I mean, you know, yay for effort, but come on, guys, if you're putting things into the masquerade, please don't put in skits. Like, it's one thing for you to walk out on stage and, like, show off your construction and talk about the materials and stuff. I would really love it if the masquerade got away from people who were designing OC characters and then telling about how awesome their OC character is, because it's like, I don't know what that's from. You're the person who made it up. I could give a shit.
What's really great about that experience is that watching it, you're basically watching someone's fan fiction come to life.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't necessarily have any acting ability.
No.
Whatsoever, or staging or framing. And that...
It's like 2 hours of cringe. It's
so delicious.
It's, I mean, like I said, there's a part of me that I hate very much that makes me want to be mean. But, mm-hmm. I mean, just don't bring your OC characters on. Or if you do, talk about the construction that went into it. Don't give me the backstory, because there's no movie. There's no media around this thing that you've made. 9 times out of 10, it's someone dressed up like a ninja, maybe with a furry tail or some cat ears on them.
No, there's media. It's on stage. It's being performed for you.
But no, what I'm saying is that, like, I can dress up like a ninja and wear a furry tail and come up with this thing and swing a sword around. But that doesn't mean that it's a costume.
I would watch the shit out of that. I would watch the shit.
But that doesn't mean I deserve the same consideration as the person who won the masquerade, for example, the person who was cosplaying as D.Va,
mm-hmm.
in a goddamn mech suit that she constructed and could awesome. Control.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. That person totally deserved to win. Yeah. That is the type of construction that I want to hear about. I don't care about, you know, Master Hashikoshi, who is a turtle, but he also is a knight and he has Excalibur and he's awesome because he doesn't wear any pants and he wears a kilt. Like... I don't care. I really don't care.
What was the lady with the headpiece and she was dancing and then the headpiece fell off? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
It was like a plant thing on her head.
See, and that's what I'm talking about. Those types of skits and those types
so
of...
It was so good. It was so good.
The costumes are built together so shittily that they fall apart on stage. And it's like, I don't want to be part of this cringy hot mess.
Yes, you do. You just don't know it.
I will admit, watching the masquerade is not as fun if you're not drinking. Mm-hmm. Because then you're just watching atrocity spill out on the television screen. Through no fault or anything of your own or the people up there.
Yeah.
And the MCs, you know, Tommy Oliver was one of the... MC, is that his real name? Or is
Green
that his,
Ranger.
Right.
Yeah, that's his name.
That is his name. That's not the Green Ranger's name.
No. Yeah, okay. He plays the Green Ranger.
I don't know. He seemed like he was getting progressively more drunk as the show went on, because why not?
Mm-hmm. Nothing as good as the year before.
Oh, with the boy band?
Yeah, the NSYNC.
People that were...
Two fifths of NSYNC.
Two fifths of NSYNC, mm-hmm. Yeah. They
no, they had a real good time.
Yeah, the masquerade is always a kind of a shit show.
So good.
My wife was explaining though that part of that skit culture around costumes comes from like anime cons. Like if you were to go to AWA, like that would be the standard, right? Everyone has a little piece of flavor fiction or whatever.
They'd probably be better at it though.
But they exactly, that's my point. The people who do that at Dragon Con, there's a time and a place for that, and Dragon Con's masquerade is not that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to yuck anyone's yum, but tell me how you made your costume. Tell me why it's impressive, how many hours it took.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about your OC fan fiction for a character that no one knows.
You know, I don't really see it adding to the presentation or the experience. I mean, especially...
What, the fan fiction or the stats?
Just the bad performance.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't really add anything to your costume. I guess when it's like that, you don't really know.
True.
Or maybe you do know, but you just don't care because it's kind of what you're supposed to do.
Maybe.
It's just... It's odd when you talk about Stu's presentation of Iron Man and the other person that he was with and how they were just wrapped in aluminum foil like years back.
That's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
Like who screened that out? I thought, didn't you have to, I guess maybe not back then.
No, you just sign up for it. You don't know. There's no screening. You just sign up for it.
I thought there was like tryouts because I remember there was a thing beforehand. Like there's the costume show.
Yeah.
And then an event before that is like costume show, like tryouts. Like maybe it's just showing that you have something before you get on stage. I thought I saw that as part of the programming.
There was a programming for trying out to be like an extra.
No, it wasn't extra. It was something related to like costume. And how many costume stuff, like big as that, are there? I think it was just for that. The costume.
I have no idea, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I know that when the Iron Man battle where they just ripped tinfoil off of each other, the stormtroopers got called out and they got pulled off stage. I don't think the stormtroopers were called out once this year.
No, I didn't see them.
I don't think so, but they used to have stormtroopers come out with like the hook off stage.
Yeah, old Opry style. Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm pretty sure they didn't sign up. Like if they did, they put like robot battle and then put the time length for Iron Man, and which is like 5 minutes or something. Which
yeah, way too long for that. way too long. Oh, that must. I'd love to see.
That was
film.
Funny to watch, but I do remember being fairly inebriated for that. So see, the more sober you are, the less fun the masquerade is. So if you do drink, I don't know, drink bottoms up and then watch the masquerade, I guess.
I enjoyed it. I don't think I was really that buzzed, but I sometimes can watch stuff like that and be as amused as Zach might be for like a really shitty movie. Because I think the cringe factor is there, but I find that really amusing, where Zach is just like cringing and he's just like retracting internally. So he's going to develop into like a black hole singularity because he's just cringing so hard. And you could mint a diamond in his belly button with the level of cringe that he's pushing in. So put a little piece of coal there and you got yourself a little one carat. So I enjoyed that. It's great. I'm definitely going to watch that next year.
Oh, I mean, it's a tradition. We have to watch it. I don't know why we have to watch it.
As with most traditions.
Yeah.
So what was that?
After that, we went to the American Murder Song. The people, there were two male singers backed up by a stand-up bass, a violin, and a banjo. They do spooky Americana murder ballads.
Mm-hmm.
The bald guy who was singing, he wrote The Dark Carnival, which is what that is based around, and also Repo the Genetic Opera, which if you've never seen it, that movie is awesome.
Huh. No, I haven't.
It's one of the few things I can point to and go, see, Paris Hilton can actually act in things.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's got Anthony Stewart Head as Giles, who's playing a repo man in the future. If you can't make the payments on your organs, he harvests them and takes them from you.
So it's called something, the Genetic Opera?
Yeah, Repo the Genetic Opera.
That's a concept for another movie I've seen.
Right, he sued the shit out of that studio.
Because that came
out like 2 years after Repo the Genetic
Opera.
It's the one with Jude Law.
Yeah, that's the exact same storyline. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's the exact same thing. I don't know if he got a settlement out of it or what, but I want to say that I saw where he sued the shit out of that production studio.
I would too.
That they're Jude really
Law
good.
Movie wasn't that great.
Do what?
The Jude Law version of it wasn't that
great.
Oh,
I didn't even see it.
Yeah, it wasn't that good.
I remember it being advertised, but no, I thought that they were great. They it scratched an itch I didn't know needed scratching.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, I would love to see an actual show of theirs because, like, this was their first time at Dragon Con.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they're really big in the steampunk world.
Okay.
But, I mean, I don't know because I kind of dip my toe in those waters every now and then, and I'm just like, nope, nope.
Mm-hmm. Toe comes back singed and, like, with nuts and bolts attached to it.
You're like, yeah, oh, it's like, fuck. Let me brush this...
yeah, we get tetanus from all this
gear
rust.
Build up off of me.
So, yeah, they were great. I thought they had a fantastic amount of theatricality.
Yeah.
And even the tone of the singer when he's, like, narrating the lines and...
Well, both of them were very good. Like the guy, the balder guy with the baritone
mm-hmm.
voice. He was a good singer. The tenor that was there was great. I don't know the guy's name,
mm-hmm.
but the guy that looked kind of like Robert Plant if he were at a Ren Faire.
Yeah, yeah, they're both really good.
They were both very, very good singers.
I think another case of the album not measuring up to the live show.
See, I don't know. I have a feeling that one would, especially if you like murder ballads. No, mm-mm.
No, I've listened to it.
Oh, do you have it?
I listened to it online.
Oh, okay.
It's weird.
Is it?
It's much because it doesn't have that kind of theatric atmosphere. Element. Yeah, none of that.
It just falls flat. Got it.
Yeah, and I think there was it sounds like they had like synthetic instruments or some other kind of sample stuff.
Oh, okay.
Instead of the instruments that they had there,
mm-hmm, yeah.
They had on stage. So I'm sure it's fine. It's just with a lot of times, I think it's just tough to really capture a live performance. And even then, I don't think you ever really capture it. You just do your own sort of rendition of something that you can capture.
Sure.
In order to, you know, sell an album.
Yeah.
I don't think... Like, even when you get a really great live album that gets recorded, it's just a really great slice of what that show was to experience.
Sure.
And if you get, like, a concept album that has a lot of parts that you may not be able to perform live, that's to kind of spruce up your a home listening experience or a car listening experience so that you have a lot of layers to kind of chew on. Because you don't have that physicality of the noise hitting you and the theater and whatever kind of lighting they have.
Right.
And just kind of those IRL sound moments. And Yeah.
Well,
I'll have to give a listen to the other stuff, just a little bit that I did listen to. I was like, oh, well, and it's mostly just it's really different in style.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that kind of...
The atmosphere isn't
mm-hmm.
right. Got
mm-hmm.
it. Okay, well, then I guess I'll save the $20 it was to pick up their albums.
I'll send you some links, because I thought I can't remember if I found them on Spotify or somewhere else online.
Oh, yeah. Don't have Spotify. Yes. I really need to get it, but
I'll take a look. I mean, it's Spotify is like Spotify's like 30,000 Olympic swimming pools, like put together, and you just want to like splash in the water a little bit every once in a while. You can't get everywhere. It's just so much depth, and you spend just as much time looking for something, unless you particularly know that it's there,
right?
So, yeah, I thought they were great. Their live show was fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could get something from the album. Might have to actually listen to it again.
Yeah.
To kind of have more developed opinion.
Sure. But yeah, after they left, Crew Shadows played there. This was their 20th anniversary closing out Dragon
mm-hmm.
Con
mm-hmm.
on Sunday night. They started at 1:30 in the morning.
That was intense.
I love the Crew Shadows. I've seen them every year I've been. They're great. They're like, I like to think of them as Dragon Con's house band.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know if you saw in the survey that went around
mm-hmm.
to apparently there are a lot of people that are just like, yeah, crew shadows are kind of lame.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, fuck you, don't come. Like, if you don't enjoy it, then don't go to it.
Yeah.
I
mean, they definitely bring a show. It's nothing like where I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, they don't really deserve this spot. You know, we're after watching the show, they do. I mean, it's an awesome show.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, he even said on the, like on stage that it was their 20th year there. They had flown into New York Friday and driven down to, Atlanta from New York. The previous week, my wife follows a couple of blog or vloggers, I guess, on YouTube that went to the German like dark wave festival called Mira Luna. And like they were playing there. Mira Luna is like 100,000 person music festival.
Yeah.
Like, so they took some time out of their schedule to be there. And it's like, yeah, they obviously love being there as much as everyone else does.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's always really good, I think, to see them.
Yeah.
I mean,
can you imagine having your career on a 20-year track and then, like, you know, annually coming
spot.
Back to
yeah.
the same venue to perform something? That's I can't understand the complexities of that relationship.
Oh yeah.
Or experience that you would have in order to do that.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, Voltaire has a stage now, but my first year going, either 04 or 05, Voltaire was a concourse musician, like Wasted Wine and Stoneburner. Like, there was no stage. Like, he just played his acoustic guitar with no amplification because they didn't have mics. Just singing really loud over his guitar where people had, like, were sitting around him, you know, in a circle. While he was performing for him,
yeah.
that was where he started. And now he's got like a midnight show. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he used to be a concourse musician. So, yeah. Which every year I've been, the Crew Shadows have had a stage though, which they kind of need because they've got a band behind them.
Yeah.
Like they need amplification.
Oh yeah.
But the, the room that they're in is just, it's the right size for them. I think that Hyatt Centennial room.
Mm-hmm.
Is about the right size for them. Because you saw it filled up really quickly.
Oh, yeah. Well, remember last year when they had Sans amplification for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was great. What was that? What was he singing?
Oh, he was, well, and that's the other thing. Sorry, I keep having to clear my throat because I've been talking for a while. The cool thing about last year is that's the mark, I think, of a well-seasoned band is it looked like the brain for the drum machine needed to be rebooted. Not the drum machine, but for the electronic drum kit. And so they were without any sort of percussion. One of the violinists is playing an electric violin, so he would have had to reboot as well. So while they're doing that, rather than just technical malfunction on the stage, Rogue started a cappella singing White Rabbit, which...
Yeah.
Sounded awesome because he's got a good voice.
Yeah, that was great.
But he was like, I know from having played shows before, he was covering up a technical issue. Like
mm-hmm.
they never pointed it out, but like mm-hmm. looking at all the people in black shirts on stage, fiddling with wires and doing things like that. That's what he was doing. He was covering up a technical.
It was great.
Difficulty.
It was so great. What was it? Did he have it mic'd? Cause it sounded like he was yelling quite a bit. Maybe that was just, I was so close I could hear his acoustic voice and
he
the
had
mic.
It mic'd.
Was it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I don't think there was anything wrong with his headset.
Okay.
But then this year it was funny. I want to know what happened because
mm-hmm.
this year in the middle of the set, like I see him like waving off to the side of the stage and pointing down in front of the crowd.
Oh yeah, that lady who got passed out.
And well, yeah, like then he stops the show mid-song and goes, I need medical out here. Can security get out here?
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell's going on? And then these like big guys push their way through the crowd
mm-hmm.
and everyone makes a path. And I don't know what happened because he was just like, well, 20 years of Dragon Con, this is the first time I've ever seen that happen. And then they kick back into the music, right?
Oh, yeah.
When everything was resolved and everyone was okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what was going on. You said someone got passed out? Or?
Yeah, I think this lady passed out. Yeah.
Okay.
At least she went down, and they were like, oh, I don't know what's happening with her.
Yeah.
It was like that one guy last year, the super drunk guy.
Oh, that you had to help out?
And yeah.
Con took care of somewhere?
Yeah. Yeah, I handed him to a very unfortunate con volunteer. I was like, he needs something. I don't know. You got this. I'm going to go back in. But I still like took him out because he was just like falling over and he was just going to be on the floor and get trampled and et cetera.
Yeah.
Anything
else about the Crew Shatter show?
No, it was a great show. I loved hearing some of their new songs. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. It sounds like they need all the help they can get. Go out and buy Astro Mythology. I really like that album.
It's good.
What we've been using tracks to close these, right?
We've been using tracks to close. Yeah.
Oh, these Dragon Con.
Yeah. He was at the end. Yeah. The last one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's great. If you like dark wave music, it's really danceable too.
Mm-hmm. I'd say definitely dance. Clear some space in the room.
Yeah.
If you got a phone booth size, just make sure one, two step to the side. That's it. It's good. It's a lot of fun.
So after that, we went back to the hotel. There was pool catastrophe.
There was no catastrophe. It was a pool event.
An event?
Yeah, it was a pool event. It was great. So good.
Which I will point out, the only reason that I came down with your wife to get you is because I was laying there and your wife goes, he'll come in when he's ready.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting there and I'm like, we got to get up really early in the morning to leave. It's like 4 a.m.
It was great.
And I was like, if I know Richard, he's going to come in this room and then he's going to flop down on me in the bed.
Yep.
And just roll around, and I'm going to be stuck in a wet bed.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go down with you, and we'll grab towels, and we'll try to catch him. Like
two grandmas, these little grandmas, they came down with their blankets and their hot tea. These two little grandmas. It was good. I had fun. The pool was open and available, and it was hot. So I just jumped
in. It was very hot.
So I just jumped in. It was great. A lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad you had fun.
Yeah, you guys should have come. It was great. It was so good.
No, maybe we'll see you guys next year.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's one more Dragon Con coverage episode, maybe.
Maybe.
I guess don't be dicks to each other. Be nice.
Or if you do, be really nice dicks.
Be really nice. It's okay to be courteous dicks.
It's okay to be a polite dick. Sometimes people want a polite dick in their life.
A polite dick.
A polite dick. There's nothing wrong with a polite dick. Just a little bit of dick hanging out. And I don't know. Were we going to do a summation? Did you want to save that for some other time?
Oh, yeah. We can do go through a buys if you wanted right now. Or
I mean, because I honestly, most of my thoughts and takeaways I've kind of went through, I think.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I
have
anything.
Well, then, yeah, if in that case, then the last thing I will say then would be that this past year, Saturday was the worst.
Mm-hmm. I'd say for organizational performance.
Also the crush of people.
Yes.
This is the third year in a row that something pretty dangerous has happened on a Saturday night. This year it was someone threw a chair from the Marriott into just the open, like where people are crowding around.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly one woman, if she had not been cosplaying as Loki and had her helmet cushion the fall of that chair, she would have more than likely been brain damaged, if not killed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the resolution as to whether or not they found anyone.
I think they might have. I think they were looking into it for a bit.
Last year, people in the Marriott were throwing beer bottles out into the... and the bottles were hitting with enough force to crack marble floor, making shrapnel. And the year before that, the Hilton... Someone knocked out the window there. I can't remember if that was football fans or con-goers. And also, I think someone was sexually assaulted who was cosplaying.
I think I heard about that. I don't know much about the details. With
which, yeah, I don't know a huge amount about the details. I think that there's a lot of talk, if you're on the Facebook group, everyone's very quick to point fingers at, oh, it was the football fans. Oh, it was the jocks. Statistically, with the amount of people that are in that area, the chances are much more likely that it's a con goer, in my opinion. Because, yes, there are a lot of football fans there, but football fans don't, I don't think, have blocks in the hotel rooms.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you really do with, you know, the outliers for behavior. I mean, when you have so many people kind of jammed in a spot.
I honestly think what they could do if...
I mean, you have like after sporting thing events where occasionally, like, you know, start flipping some cars or something. You know, and that doesn't happen after every sporting event, but you have some raucous rabble rousing
okay,
stuff.
So if you look at the days where it's the worst, usually in terms of safety, fights getting started, things like that, it's always Saturday. And to me, you know, not to throw, like, the people who are coming on Saturday are probably people who over years and years and years, the reputation has been built. Dragon Con's crazy, yo, right? And so they show up on Saturday and just get hammered, and drunk people cause a bunch of shit.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
No one makes good decisions when they're blasted out of their minds. I mean, this year there was a guy walking to his hotel who almost knocked my wife into traffic. You remember that? When we were waiting at the crosswalk, you just kind of stumbling around.
Oh, the big fat guy.
The big fat guy that was walking towards the Hyatt.
We saw his ass.
Yeah. Yeah, he almost knocked my wife into traffic.
He had some ass scabs. Hemorrhoid stuff, I think.
And then we got him set up and righted and walking down there. Like, he just falls down on the sidewalk again. That was Saturday night.
Yeah.
So,
super drunk.
I mean, I honestly think it'll take someone getting killed for the con to do anything about it, because I'm sorry, my opinion of the people that make the people, not the volunteers themselves, but the people that make the decisions as to whether or not to address things or have any changes be even looked at. In other words, I guess the people who were profiting off the con, there's no real reason for them to do anything until something happens that's bad enough for attendance to drop precipitously.
No. I mean, yeah. It takes a lot for people to say no to money sometimes.
I would be, and I think the resolution to this would be to stop selling one day badges, because if you just stop selling Saturday badges, well then Friday night would be the shitty night. You see what I'm saying? So, like, sell 4 day badges. If you don't want to come for 4 days, if you don't want to spend, do you want to spend $150 on a 4 day badge and go there for a day? Have at it, but I guarantee you it would cut out some of the people who were just there to drink and hit on geek girls and or geek guys and start shit.
Yeah, I'd like to see a breakdown numerically of the representation of 1 day badges as opposed to all day badges. Yeah, that'd be interesting to see. And then I would
like to see them try it for a year and just see if there is a cutoff for people throwing shit from the balcony at the Marriott into the crowd of people.
I mean, there generally, I imagine, would be people who are a little more committed to the experience just because it's an investment to have to pay for all the days at the same time. And if you're going to be there for that many days, it's because you value something of a level from the experience. And I imagine that would be kind of hard maybe for the people who, you know, don't live in the city now, who used to be students or a little farther out. And so they'd be like, well, fuck this noise. You know, I can only be there 1 or 2 days. you know, why would I pay for a 40 pass? So
right, but it would cut out people who are willing to spend. Oh, okay, $60 for a Saturday badge, and I can bring in my own booze and whatever parking garage that I've picked at or parking lot I've picked at, and just get shithoused on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, $60 isn't nearly as much as $150 plus your hotel room.
Yeah.
I mean, I really don't think it's necessarily the people who have hotel room, like who have invested that amount of money in staying multiple nights.
Yeah, no.
I mean, think it's the people who show up for one night to hit on people, start shit, and get shithoused.
I mean, I definitely think it would help for that. I'd love to see what the balance is so I can... Because imagine Dragon Con would be like, fuck that noise. We're going to cut our attendance by one third. Fuck that.
Yeah, I mean... Well,
but it would make a pleasant, more pleasant experience for everyone.
Well, yeah, because I mean...
To the people that actually did come and wanted to stay the whole time.
Because, yeah, well, like my first few years going, attendance was like in the low to mid 20,000s of people. It's grown... Four times.
Yes. There's only so much space there.
And there's only so much space until they start adding more hotels. So, like, at a certain point, you know, there's nothing I can do other than either stop going, which I don't intend to do.
And there's people that do. I mean, there are long-time goers. I know we have some people in our friend circle who are basically like, yeah, this is too... It's too big to function in the way that it's functioning right now. And they're just like, I don't see how this is, it's not as fun. It's not tenable to have this many people at one time. And structurally, it's just not designed to manage this many folks, which I can kind of agree, especially on the really high points of traffic. It just becomes really hard to make something function. And I think it becomes a conflict when you have, like, let's say the John Cusacks that can come.
Yeah.
You know, other names like that that you're able to, like, afford and bring in. I measure, which is probably partly due to attendance.
You know, oh, sure. Yeah. It's 100% linked to the amount of money that's coming in.
And if you're someone who is in charge of managing and designing the con, it's like, well, why would we want to make it get smaller? You know, because they're like, well, then I imagine a growth-minded, kind of, if that's what they have as part of their planning, like having a growth-minded mindset, then that suggestion, while helping out on a lot of issues, it has no traction. But on the flip side, on the other side of the government, there comes a point where structurally, if there isn't some kind of solution that I can't understand, then changing the structure of it, whether through attendance or some other means, more hotels, something like that, spreading it a little further, that you need to do something.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, to be fair, the Marriott has always been like, the Marriott and the Hyatt have always been like the party places.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember there being nearly as much. And when I was younger, I would be out 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. Sunday nights, not sleeping necessarily. But I don't remember nearly the amount of violence that you see happen. Mm-hmm. And by violence, I mean like casually chucking chairs off of balconies into crowds of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see the stats for complaints.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine they'd go up just because of the amount of people attending, but, yeah, I think you could control it a lot better, I think, just by limiting access. Because, again, statistically, it's a con-goer that's starting shit.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of...
It's a very childish reaction to go, it was them.
Mm-hmm.
It was the jocks.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. Yeah. Maybe, but...
Possibly, but probably not. It's just, I'm trying to think of... a world in which that will happen. I can't see that. I agree with your suggestion. Yeah. That would improve things in a direction that I would probably find
very
pleasing.
And I mean, you know,
like if there was 60,000 people maybe or 55,000.
Well, like, so Dragon Con, it's unique because it's spread out among the different hotels. Like there's always a rush on getting PAX Prime or PAX West or whatever they're calling themselves now, PAX badges. Because it's in a convention center. MomoCon's in a convention center. And so they have to cap attendance because Fire Marshal says only this many people can be here.
How many people are at something like MomoCon?
At MomoCon, last year it was between 25 and 30,000.
Yeah.
I think was the last number I saw. That, I mean, that's still larger than Dragon Con was my first time going.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Congress Center can hold a lot of people. Yeah. So, you know, it's much different than it was at the Georgia Tech Student Center when it was just the free anime convention you would go to get your convention fix.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to go since it's blown up though.
Yeah. I've always wanted to go. It's every single year I'm working that damn weekend and I've put enough swaps in and trades to do Dragon Cons. I'm traded out.
Yeah. But yeah, I think capping the attendance is probably a good, but you know, then again, you create a culture of rushing for badges and scalping when you do that. So
ugh.
I don't know what the answer is. Like basically this is just me complaining.
yeah, Zach.
Being a man and complaining, but, yeah, no, I mean, I'll go again next year. We've already got our room for next year.
Yeah, I definitely want to come next year.
Already got our tickets.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be back then.
Hopefully, oh yeah, I bought my tickets too. Yeah.
Hopefully nothing bad happens next year.
Yeah, like we're gonna be the ones throwing the chairs. Except they're gonna be those inflatable like foam chairs. So it's not gonna do any damage.
It's not
gonna
do any damage.
It's going to actually, they'll float and they might even like drift away in the wind. Yeah, exactly. Just like flying away. Exactly. So I don't foresee any real problems with that.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that was a good, good summation. We had a good grandpa session at the end.
Yeah. And, it is a grandpa session.
Oh, back in my day. We had 2,000 people in a room. We're like, oh my gosh, this is so many people.
Oh, yeah.
John Cusack, who?
Who's John Cusack?
Exactly.
But yeah, no, I definitely recommend going despite the bad things that we said at the end. It is very fun for most of the day, most of the panels.
Yeah, go with someone if find an interest or a particular track and just dive in and have fun.
Yeah.
I know with me it was the first year it was very hard to plan things.
Yeah.
And the app's pretty good. It's for finding events, so definitely utilize that and then plan
some
stuff.
Yeah, my first year
out.
Going, it was a paper schedule and you went through for the first hour or two in your hotel room once you got checked in with a highlighter and you highlighted things.
Yeah. Fred Flintstone handed it to him.
Yeah.
Back
if,
in the
if
day.
If you had a laptop with a spreadsheet and a little portable printer, you could print out your schedule if you want. You can make a spreadsheet and print that shit out. This app is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good for finding things. I'm sure there's a way for me to look at past cons through Dragon Con because they've rolled. I think the first year they did it was 2012, maybe 2013. But it is getting better. There's some low points every now and then, but you know, I think it's gotten better. I think they've managed the crowds a little bit better, and there's far less fighting and waiting for panels necessarily. Like it's not an unrealistic amount at this point. So everyone go to Dragon Con 2018. We'll be here in Atlanta for the foreseeable future. I think they're on a 10-year cycle now.
Yeah, definitely do it. Do it all days. Just do it.
Yeah, just do all days. Just dive right in. It does us no good to tell you what it is, because if you like the 100, well, then you're going to have a good time, but we have no idea what you're into. So
exactly. You like tea ceremonies, you're good, man.
You're good. Yeah, there's tea ceremonies there. I think it's in the steampunk track.
Yeah.
Like, there's how to host a tea party.
There's the sword and medieval weaponry and even...
Mm-hmm. Survivalists go. They talk about how the world is ending and the zombies are coming. A little bit too paranoid for me, but you know, there's lots of stuff. You'll find your niche or find your niche, I guess.
You'll find your niche in your niche.
You'll find your niche in your niche.
Exactly.
Email us if you agree, disagree.
Email Zach if you disagree.
Backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
Email me if you just want to say I'm awesome. That's cool.
Both of us have access to that email, although I think I'm the only one that checks it.
What email? Exactly.
Backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
Have we gotten any emails?
We got penis enlargement pill
coupons.
Oh,
wow, really? You did that with Gmail?
Huh?
And we still got spam with Gmail?
Yeah, I did.
I never get... Well, I do. It's just in the spam folder.
Yeah.
I think Zach was checking the spam folder. He's like, I wonder what kind of deals they have.
No, it was an Extends thing that made it through.
What, really?
Yeah.
Well, Extends like a real brand or something, you know.
Oh, is it?
It is.
Oh, is it?
They have a brand name. Like, that's not just...
it's not just like generic.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. No, Extends is a brand name for a pill.
Okay.
I've seen their ads online. Yeah.
But yeah, rate us on iTunes. Please give us 5 stars. We'll see you guys next week with, pretty sure By the Rights.
I think
that's what episode 10 mm-hmm. will be. So By the Rights.
We'll see. We might have an extended, me time. Just because I don't know how much we can squeeze out of By the Rights. I really enjoyed the game.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I know because with the Dark Souls one, we talked about the Dark Souls game. We talked a little bit about game culture in general. I think we kind of got distracted by that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Dark Souls game itself. So we'll see. We'll try to have fun.
All right.
All right, guys.
Be good to each other. Bye.
Be very good. Be a good dick. Bye.
Be a polite dick.